This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. And now, the fiscal situation in Puerto Rico is dismal. Public debt, including that of the central government and public corporations, stands around $73 billion. The government's credit rating has been degraded to junk bond level. Any new credits seem to be available only at truly usurious rates, above 10%. Wall Street commentators admit that it's been clear for a while that Puerto Rico is going to have to default on its debt.
The other side of this coin is the fact that two dozen U.S. corporations extract around $35 billion a year in profits from and through their operations in Puerto Rico. Bear in mind that the total income of the government of Puerto Rico is around $9 billion. U.S. corporations benefit from the tax exemption measures that have been centerpiece of the government's development policy since 1947.
And now, Rafael Bernabe, candidate for governor of Puerto Rico for the Partido del Pueblo Trabajador in 2012, professor and director of the Federico de Unas Hispanic Studies Center in the University of Puerto Rico, economist, and who has published three books, including Puerto Rico Crisis and Alternatives, joins us, and we are very privileged to have him speaking to us from Puerto Rico on Puerto Rico's Economic Crisis, Analysis, Alternatives, and Solutions.
Thank you for having me.
If you can help us understand to what degree or how the relationship of Puerto Rico has been shaped by its relationship to the U.S. corporate juggernaut? And does that take us to the dismal fiscal situation that Puerto Rico is in today?
Yes, there are many aspects to the situation of Puerto Rico. The more immediate one, of course, the one that many people are talking about, is the debt crisis. But behind the debt crisis lies the economic crisis of Puerto Rico. The economy of Puerto Rico has been stagnant for more than a decade. That means it hasn't grown. It hasn't grown in terms of income. It hasn't grown in terms of employment. In fact, in the last 10 years, Puerto Rico has lost about 20% of the jobs that existed in 2006 do not exist anymore. So it's a very, as you said, a very dismal situation. The unemployment rate in Puerto Rico right now is around 14%, which is about three times what you have in the U.S. The labor force participation rate is about 40%. What that means is that 60% of the people in a working age are not even looking for a job because they know they won't find one. Only 40% of the people are either working or looking for a job. Out of those who are either working or looking for a job, 50% do not find one. So it's a terrible situation. That's also one of the reasons why migration to the United States has accelerated in the last few years. Many people leave the island because they cannot make a living here. But behind that stagnation of the Puerto Rican economy lies the fact that for the longest time, for almost a century now, the economy of Puerto Rico, as you mentioned, has been dominated, that's the only word that you could use, by very large U.S. corporations. In one epoch, it was the big sugar companies before World War II. Later on, it was manufacturing companies, what normally we call light manufacturing. Right now, it's very high capital-intensive investments, such as pharmaceuticals. But whichever stage you want to take, you always have very large U.S. corporations that generate a considerable amount of profit in Puerto Rico, but most of that is not reinvested in Puerto Rico. It leaves the island. So you have the sort of paradox in which you have an economy which is stagnant, does not generate employment, does not generate sufficient government revenue, but at the same time it generates a considerable amount of profit, which is not invested in the island. Therefore, it doesn't create employment in Puerto Rico. So while you have to address the debt issue and how to renegotiate that debt, which is unpayable in the terms that it was contracted to begin with, one also has to deal with that economic structure, which has to be transformed at the same time that you deal with the debt issue.
And what role do tax credits and tax relief to U.S. corporations play to exacerbate the budget crisis?
Exactly. That's a very important issue. While, as I said, ever since the beginning of the 20th century, the Puerto Rican economy has been largely dominated by U.S. corporations. Since 1947, the main mechanism that the Puerto Rican government has used to attract U.S. investment to Puerto Rico is to basically offer them a tax holiday. This is what we call the policy of tax exemption, which means that they are charged very little or no taxes. Now, that is very attractive, needless to say, to companies, makes it very attractive for companies to invest in Puerto Rico. It was even more so before 1996, because before that date, they even had a larger exemption because they didn't have to pay, or basically didn't have to pay federal taxes either. So you have a situation, as I said, in which these corporations operate in Puerto Rico. They pay relatively low taxes. Right now, they are paying around 4%, a 4% tax, and they generate tremendous amount of profit. It leaves the islands not reinvested in Puerto Rico. Since it's not reinvested in Puerto Rico, needless to say, it doesn't create employment in Puerto Rico. It doesn't create economic growth in Puerto Rico. It doesn't create government revenue in Puerto Rico. So one of the things that one must do as an emergency measure, because the government doesn't have money to work with, and as a more long-term reevaluation of the government's economic strategy, is to reevaluate this policy of tax exemption. It's not working. Maybe at one point in the past, you could make the argument that insofar as it attracted U.S. investment and it created employment, it created economic growth and so on, you could make the argument that it worked in the past, but it doesn't work now. As I said, the economy has been stagnant for more than 10 years. It doesn't grow, and you have all of these profits leaving the island. So this policy has to be changed at the same time that you need to renegotiate the debt that has reached a level which makes it unsustainable. Unfortunately, the attitude of the government of Puerto Rico right now is not to reevaluate that tax exemption policy that I just mentioned. On the contrary, it's to carry out a whole series of austerity measures which we think would perpetuate the economic crisis instead of helping us get out of it.
Well, you've certainly given us a sense that a century of colonialism is really a century of domination by U.S. corporations and what it has wrought. Take us now to some of the vulture capitalists who are circling the island, ready to extract still more wealth from the impoverished island.
Well, yeah, the issue of the hedge funds and the vulture funds has to do with the with the debt issue, of course. Over the years, the government of Puerto Rico has issued bonds. You can divide those into two categories: bonds of the central government of Puerto Rico and bonds issued by the public corporations, the electric company, the water company, and so on and so forth. And if you sum all of that up, it's about $73 billion debt. Now, what happens in cases such as you have in Puerto Rico is similar to what happened in Argentina, similar to what happened in Greece, is that there are many investors who hold these bonds, and they are afraid that they will not be able to collect the profits that they were expecting. So they are willing to sell them now at a discount. If they bought it by 100, they're willing to sell it by, let's say, 60. And hedge funds, their business, and vulture funds, their business is to buy these bonds at a discount and then to demand payment at the nominal value, which means that they expect to get a tremendous profit. If you bought one by 100 and you expected a 10 profit, now you bought one by 60 and then you expect 110, you know, return, which is a very big profit. So the vultures, they call vultures because they buy, you know, bonds that are in distress, bonds that are insecure, and they buy them at a discount, and they expect to get paid fully and therefore get an extraordinary profit. And we know for a fact that vulture funds have been buying many of Puerto Rico's bonds. We do not know exactly what amount, what percentage of the bonds of the Puerto Rican government are now in the hands of vulture funds. Some people say 25%, some people say 50%. We really don't know. That's one of the reasons why we insist that we have to audit the debt. We have to know exactly who is it that now owns Puerto Rico's debt. There's this whole myth that's always used that these bonds are in the hands of old people, old middle-class people who, you know, put all their savings into this, and if we suspend payments, then we would be hurting them. We don't deny that there may be some people that are in that situation, but it seems to be the case that most of Puerto Rico's debt is owned by either hedge funds, as I said, or very big investment funds, which have, you know, some of them have been very vocal about what they think should be done in Puerto Rico. There's a group which is called the Ad Hoc Group. It's a group that brings together about 38 investment funds, including hedge funds. And they have put out a paper, which is called, you can get it in the internet, it's called For Puerto Rico, There is a Better Way. And their position, the position of these funds, is basically that the debt has to be paid, the debt cannot be renegotiated, it has to be paid in full. And in order to do that, Puerto Rico, the government of Puerto Rico, has to carry out certain policies, and they spell them out. You have to fire teachers, you have to close hospitals, you have to lower the coverage of the health insurance that people get. You have to reduce government employment. You have to privatize certain government agencies. You have to sell off government property. All sorts of austerity measures that are going to hurt working people in order to pay the debt. So they have a very clear program on what should be done in Puerto Rico, which is to sacrifice Puerto Rico's working people's living standards in order to pay the debt, which is already in progress. You know, many measures of this nature have been adopted since 2006, but they want to intensify these measures. Needless to say, we think that that is unfair, and it's also inefficient from an economic point of view. It's only going to impoverish the country even more than it is. It's going to depress the economy even more. Even if it does get payments to these people, from a perspective of a social justice perspective or a perspective of enabling our economy to recuperate, it makes no sense, and it should be opposed.
So what is to be done? I mean, the Kruger report mentions that there should be a control board which would actually insulate the politicians, political, from the people in terms of further austerity measures. But what else can be done if you don't have that?
Well, right now you have, I would say, there are three perspectives struggling with each other in Puerto Rico, so to speak. One of them is the perspective I just mentioned. It's the perspective of the more intransigent sector of the bondholders, reflected in the report I just mentioned, which says you have to pay the debt, there's no renegotiation, and you have to apply whichever austerity measures are necessary in order to do so. Then there's the position of the government. The position of the government is slightly different. It says, no, this debt has to be renegotiated. This debt has to be restructured. We cannot keep paying this debt in the terms that it was originally contracted. But we are going to combine that, the government argues, with a whole series of austerity measures. And they are proposing a whole series of measures, which include many of the things that I just mentioned, privatizing certain activities such as generation of electricity, for example, turning many government agencies into private-public partnerships, which is sort of semi-privatization, reducing and attacking and rewriting many labor laws which now protect workers in many ways. Just to give you an example, they want any increases in the federal minimum wage that may be adopted in the near future or in the future, they would not apply to workers in Puerto Rico that are less than 25 years old. So young people, if there's an increase in the minimum wage, it would not apply to young people. That's one example of the things they want to do. And so that is And in order to implant these policies, as you mentioned, they want to create this fiscal control board, which would be in charge of overseeing that this program is carried out. It's, as you said, it's a mechanism, trying to create a mechanism which would be out of the reach of voters, no matter what. If voters in the next elections in 2016 vote out the government that we have now because they disagree with these austerity policies, well, the austerity policies will continue because they would be in the hands of this joint board. We think the third position is the position that we, that I and many people in the labor movement and the community movement advocate, is that we have to struggle to renegotiate that debt, undoubtedly. We have to reconsider that policy of tax exemption that I mentioned before. Simply put, we have to start taxing some of these corporations, not only the ones that produce things in Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, we have the very large U.S. Mega stores. Well, we have very big Walmart stores in Puerto Rico that they generate a considerable amount of profit and they pay very little taxes. Well, they should be taxed. And the third element is that we have to stop these austerity measures that are being pushed forth. In a more medium, long-term perspective, we need to have a true structural transformation of the Puerto Rico's economy, in which the government has to promote what we call internal initiatives, that is, economic activity which is locally owned. It can be cooperative, it can be private, it can be public. We can discuss, you know, which is the best mix of those things. But the main element has to be that if you generate profit, if you generate surplus, if you generate income in Puerto Rico, as much as possible of that should be reinvested in Puerto Rico instead of leaving the island as it does now, so that it creates economic growth in Puerto Rico and it creates employment in Puerto Rico. Needless to say, our perspective is that that growth has to be sustainable. It's not just anything that we want to produce. Right now, we insist that we have to move towards a mechanism in which the economy of Puerto Rico generates income and it's reinvested in Puerto Rico, and therefore the economy can grow in whichever direction we want. Right now, it doesn't work like that. Right now, whatever profit we do generate in Puerto Rico, a considerable amount of it leaves the island, and therefore it doesn't contribute to the island's development. As I said, this is not the perspective of the government. So that third perspective moving forward is going to require for working people, for unions, community groups, progressive parties, and so on to come together to elaborate a more specific plan in this of this nature and mobilize behind it. It's going to be a struggle, needless to say.
Well, while the Puerto Rican government is considering imposing an 11% cut to Medicare and Medicaid for 2016, and more than 600 schools may be closed, and in the next 5 years, on top of the 150 already closed by budget cuts, etc., and juxtaposed with this, the profitability for Wall Street, as banks and law firms have already racked up $1.4 billion in fees. But at the same time, I received a phone call this morning that said, hey, do you know what's happening with the students? They are already taking over one of the environmental-based agencies. Tell me more about that and what is beginning to coalesce with groups such as yours in response to this deadly crisis.
Yeah, there are many, many, many things going on, and they are coming together, which we hope they come together in even a stronger fashion in the near future. About three weeks ago, several important unions in Puerto Rico, for example, the affiliates in Puerto Rico to the of the Service Employees International Union, but not only them, other organizations too, basically public sector unions came together in a large assembly of delegates from all the unions. There would have been about, I would say, about 1,000 delegates. And in that assembly, they approved a resolution opposing the government's austerity measures and vowed to begin mobilizations in order to stop these proposed measures. Back last Friday, there was a very big march that went from gathered in front of the Capitol building in San Juan, and then it marched all the way to the governor's mansion to express our rejection of the of this government plan. These plans that the government has have not yet been turned into specific pieces of legislation, so it's still a battle that's beginning now. At the same time, as you said, the University of Puerto Rico has a long history of militancy and mobilization by workers, by teachers, and by students. So it's one of the places where traditionally in Puerto Rico resistance is very strong when it's a matter of resisting anti-democratic or regressive government policies. And so in the past few months, university people, either whether teachers or workers or students or the three of them together, have mobilized to defend the budget of the university, because one of the measures that the government is proposing is reducing the budget of the university. Defend pensions of workers of the university, which is one of the things that they also wanted to attack, and to defend access to the university by students, opposing hikes in costs of university education. What happened today is that students are also involved in a struggle which is going on in the town of Arecibo, which is a town in the north of Puerto Rico. One of the consequences of the unplanned and chaotic way in which the economy of Puerto Rico has grown for many decades is the tremendous amount of waste generated, you know, material waste. We cannot put the trash anywhere because the economy generates so much of it. And the way that they want to fix that is not to reduce the generation of waste, but to build a very big incinerator to burn the trash. And many people justifiably have many concerns about the environmental impact of this process of incineration. And so it has been a very strong struggle of the communities surrounding the area where the incinerator is going to be built, if it's planned, to stop the construction of this this project. And several government agencies have to approve this project so that it can go forward. And one of them is the Department of Natural Resources, which in particular is in charge of evaluating the impact of this project in the water system of Puerto Rico, the rivers and so on. And so they have to issue a permit so that they can operate this plant, that it will not, you know, certifying that it will not affect the water. So students today blocked and basically what you would call had a sit-in. They went in there and they sat and they blocked the operation of the offices of this agency for a few hours in order to express their opposition to this agency issuing the permit. So it's part of the struggle against the establishment of this incinerator, in which students and young people, not only students, are, you know, expressing their solidarity with that struggle. It was basically organized by students from that belong to our party, the Working People's Party, and students and young people who belong to the Movimiento Independentista Nacional Ostosiano, which is one of the independence movement in Puerto Rico.
At this time, what do you see as the support role of people here? Of course, there are millions of Puerto Ricans here, but the broader population of goodwill. What should be our response, not the least of which is to tear apart, I think, these two dozen U.S. corporations that have extracted around $35 billion a year in profits from or through their operatives in Puerto Rico? What should we be doing?
Well, I think there are many things that can be done. As you said, I think we have to work together in order to get some information out of Puerto Rico about the situation. We are facing a situation in which we have to denounce these very large investment funds, many of which have their big offices or the central offices in New York, where you can picket, where you can march. Some of these people that the government of Puerto Rico is going to be negotiating with should be pressured, should be, they should be let, you know, people should let them know that that Puerto Rico needs to renegotiate its debt. It cannot keep paying this debt. It cannot sacrifice its public services and its economic future paying a debt which is unsustainable. At the same time, I think we have to build a movement, joint movement. Many people sometimes ask me, well, why should the government of the United States or the federal government, for example, support economic reconstruction in Puerto Rico when it does not do that in the United States? And my answer to that is, well, it should do that in the United States. I think we need a joint program of progressives in Puerto Rico and the United States that argues that the federal government and the state governments have to fund the economic reconstruction of poor people, of poor communities, create jobs for unemployed people, reconstruct social services that we need, and we need them in New York and we need them in Puerto Rico. So it's part of the same struggle. There is a possibility, we don't know yet what's going to happen with that, that Puerto Rico may be included within Chapter 9 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. It's one of the things that the government is pushing for. We don't know whether it's going to happen or not. Right now, as many people know, Detroit, for example, went officially bankrupt, so it went to the court and there was a negotiation presided over by a federal judge and so on. So that may also happen in Puerto Rico. We don't know yet. But if it does happen, it means that the situation of Puerto Rico, to a considerable extent, is going to be in the hands of a federal judge. And we have to make sure that the federal judge makes decisions which are in accord with the needs of the Puerto Rican people and not the needs of the very large and very wealthy creditors. So if that were to happen, that would also be a point for mobilization to make sure that the courts decide in favor of the people and not in favor of the big interests. So I think the most important thing is for working people in the United States to organize, to defend themselves, you know, to have a program to come out of this crisis with a more just society, and you have to include within that the demands of Puerto Rico and the needs of Puerto Rico, which, in terms of renegotiating our debt, instead in terms of reconstructing our economy.
We want to thank Rafael Bernabe, economist, author of Puerto Rico, Crisis and Alternatives, and organizer extraordinaire. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.